Okay, dear dumb friends, we are going to start the Sutta teaching session. We'll first of all pay homage to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. ඒකායනෝ අයම් භික්කවේ මග්ගෝ සත්තානං විසුද්ධියා සෝක පරිද්දවානං සමතික්කමාය දුක්ඛ දෝමනස්සානං අත්ථගමාය ඥායස්ස අධිගමාය නිබ්බානස්ස සච්චිකිරියාය යදිදං චත්තාරෝ සතිපට්ඨානාති. Dear Dhamma friends, as you all know, we are discussing various suttas, particularly in order to take some benefit, some sort of a guidance to our practice. And as a result, we have discussed Sabbasava Sutta and again Kayagata Sati Sutta, so that we are able to get some insights from those suttas to our practice. And nowadays, we are discussing Satipatthana Sutta, which is one of the very important sutta, especially for mindfulness practice, and again in total to our whole practice. Meditation practice. So basically, Satipatthana Sutta Buddha has preached while he was in a country called Kuru and a village called Kammasa Dhamma. So there are very important suttas in this region Buddha has preached. Say for example, Aryavasa Sutta, that is another very profound sutta Buddha has taught at the same place in the country of Kuru, the village of Kammasa Dhamma. Now, Satipatthana Sutta also Buddha has preached in this place, and there Buddha himself has taken the subject, topic, and then started to explain. Basically, Buddha says, Ekayano ayam bhikkave maggo. There is a direct path to realization. Sattanang suddhya, for the purification of the beings. Soka pariddhavanang samatikkamaya, in order to transcend sorrow and lamentation. Dukkha domanasanang atthagamaya, in order to remove suffering and various types of despair. Nyayas adhigamaya, in order to realize the path, the correct path. And to nibbanasa sachikriyaya, in order to realize the nibbana. So there is a direct path, there is a sort of unwavering path, straight path, and that is nothing but Chattaro Satipatthana, four foundations of mindfulness. So in this section we can understand there are particularly four types of Satipatthana mentioned: Kayanupassana, Vedanupassana, Chittanupassana and Dhammanupassana. And now we are in the Kayanupassana section. So Kayanupassana section starts with Anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing. So, mindfulness on breathing is very popular subject, and there are many thousands of yogis, practitioners, are using mindfulness on breathing as their primary object, as their main meditation subject. So, there are advantages that it is freely available for us. There are no any additional things to be gained. So, we are from our birth time, so we are breathing. Now we are trying to use the same breathing process in order to improve our mindfulness. We already have a little amount of mindfulness, and we are now trying to stimulate it, now trying to improve it using mindfulness on breathing. So Buddha starts that in a very simple manner. So sato vasa sati, sato passa sati. This practitioner mindfully breathing in and mindfully breathing out. So, this simplicity is one of the key feature of this whole practice, where the simplicity of the practice takes us or leads us to very profound understanding. It is not the complexity taking us to the profound understanding, rather the simplicity taking us to a very profound understanding. So, Satipatthana Sutta itself is described one after the other. There are various techniques, altogether 21 techniques. And each one, we can say, fairly simple, but it doesn't mean that it is easy to practice. So as practitioners, you all know how difficult it is to keep your mind on breathing, because mind is not used to. Mind likes to stay in the past, proliferating various things which has happened in the past, or planning about the future, daydreaming, fantasizing. So all these things are something that mind is used to and mind likes to do. So we like to do that. But if someone asks to bring your attention to the breathing, so that is extremely boring and not interested. And again, that it is not exciting. So as a result, our attention again and again drifted towards the past or future, to here and there. So therefore, we can understand, even though the activity or the duty of us is to just keep our attention on breathing, implementation of that or practically involving in that is not that easy. So that requires years of practice in order to keep our attention on breathing. Now, if we are able to keep our attention on breathing, so then we can say 50 breaths, 200 breaths, 200 breaths. We can maintain our attention there. Again and again, breathing happens. Naturally, it happens. And we are keeping our attention on each breathing. So this actually helps to refine our mindfulness, establish our mindfulness again and again. So as a result, we start to live in the present moment. So whole breathing process happens in the present moment. So we are using that in a way to maintain our attention, our mind, our mental process also in the present moment. So this is the, in a way, the key behind this whole process, where we are using some sort of a bodily process, which is verily happens in the present moment, and we are using that as an anchor for the mind to stay, for the mind to maintain its attention, so that mind also start to stay in the present moment. And then we discussed about various postures, and then we started various being mindful on daily activities. And likewise, Buddha has expanded mindfulness throughout the day. It is not just you are selecting a particular time and just being trying to mindful on that time. Rather, it is expected to maintain mindfulness as much as possible. Because if not, we are very much like living in a different world, living in a mind-made world, not in the reality, but rather in something else, somewhere else. But mindfulness helps us always to be grounded, always come into the present moment, always live with the reality. So otherwise, we are in a dream. So therefore, clear comprehension, sampajanya, helps us to further enhance that quality, where we are trying to be mindful on all daily activities. Then actually Buddha taking us to a different angle to this practice, where we have wrong notion about our body. Now Kayanupassana entirely depends on the body, or entirely using the body in order to develop mindfulness and wisdom. Now we are trying to look at the body in a different angle. So typically we have kind of an idea that this body is beautiful, this body is one thing, and I am beautiful than the other person, or I am ugly than the other person, I am taller than the other person. Likewise, we all have different perceptions about the body. Now Buddha is guiding us in order to penetrate those wrong perceptions and to come to a kind of a realistic understanding about the body. So he helps us to understand that this body contains various parts, and therefore it is not just one thing, so that our compactness view will be fairly broken or fairly blurred, fairly weakened. And then again Buddha asks us to look at the body in a loathsome manner, where each part, if we consider, are not attractive, not beautiful. Rather, each part is fairly loathsome. So if one understands like that, then the possibility of lust and conceit arising is less. So if we have sort of overwhelming lust, burning lust, then it is difficult to practice anapanasati dhatu manasikara, like those fairly refined types of meditation. Rather, first of all, we need to bring our mind to the middle level, less free level. So on such occasion, we can practice patikula manasikara, or reflecting about the loathsomeness of the body, so that we are able to bring our mind back to the equanimity, back to the middle. And if one is able to practice it well, then further refined mindfulness helps us to understand various element characteristics available in the body. Now, to this we can connect today's topic. So that is Navasivatika, nine types of corpses or nine stages of a corpse. So that is another way of looking at our life, because we all know that we as human beings, so we have very limited time to live. It is not that we are going to be eternal, rather our life is extremely short. Nowadays it may be 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, 80 years. And it is very rarely that one may live over 100 years. Now, if we consider this life in that angle, then most of the quarrels would be eliminated, because we all may understand that even though at the moment I am angry, I am trying to hold something, I am trying to own something, I want to possess something, still it is very short, it's very temporary. And I am going on a sort of a useless task, because ultimately I have to leave everything aside because my life is so short. But unfortunately, people don't look at the whole thing in that angle, but they are rather obsessed with various attractive things, and they want to have more and more, possess more and more, and they are quarreling with each other, because another person also likes the same thing that we like. So there's a huge competition about the resources, about the various sensual attractions, sensual pleasures. So as a result, the whole world in a big competition. Now, if we look at our body in a way that it is going to die, so then we are in a very different angle, in a different domain, where we are trying to look at this whole thing in a different angle. Now, in this Navasivatika section, Buddha asks us to look at the body once after it has passed away, once it is died. And first, it may become discolored and swollen, and that is, we can say, one stage. And after that, various oozing liquids going to come out, and then again it become more and more loathsome. Then bad smells are going out, and again various birds and animals start to come and eat the body, so it become more and more loathsome. And after that, various internal parts going to appear. Now everything open. It is no more beautiful, rather all the internal parts are now visible and oozing and again swollen. And it is extremely unattractive and extremely loathsome. And after some time it is further decaying, and now different pieces appear at different places. And after that, now we can see the skeleton, and it is also extremely discolored and wrapped with tendons and all. And then after that, even the bones are broken into pieces. Now skeleton also we can't recognize, because all the different bones are scattered here and there. And ultimately, even those will be further decayed, and ultimately those will be converted to like parts or dust particles, even to going to like dust, powder, and ultimately that is the sort of the destiny of this human body. Actually, it is common to any body, any being, after death. So this kind of a decaying process is inevitable, and it is going on and on. Ultimately, it becomes completely absorbed the earth. Now, nowadays, actually, we can't see this whole process because people are now trying to hide this reality, and they are covering the whole thing with beautiful wrappers, beautiful clothes, and putting incense in order to avoid sort of bad smell. So likewise, they do get involved funeral directors. Now, funeral directors are there, so they know how to beautify a dead body, and therefore the reality is hidden from us. But in old India, once a person passed away, they are not doing any such beautification. Rather, they simply take the body, the dead body, and they throw it in the cemetery and they come back. So the whole process is visible. The whole destiny is visible. And if anybody wants to remove their last, so they go in search of such a corpse, and now they start to reflect how this corpse is decaying. And as I said, so this practice has two angles in a way, two benefits in a way. One is that you can look at it in a loathsomeness aspect, where you may remove the lust. Typically, we are looking at our body as attractive and even others' bodies as attractive. But here, we are looking at the body in a loathsome manner so that we get sort of a real understanding, the realistic understanding about the body. Now, that is one aspect. And on the other hand, more and more we understand that this body is a dead body. Now, this person may be, suppose, 70 years old, and he was living 70 years in this world, and he had his family, he has his education, and he has his, suppose, university education, he has his job, and he had his children, husband, wife, parents, his occupation, reputation, so etc. etc. So many things he had actually, but now everything gone. He's just a dead body. Now this, so if one is understanding in that angle, then we will understand that this death is inevitable. Even though we feel that we are living right now, we don't know when we are going to die. And again, we don't know how we are going to die. And again, we don't know at which place we are going to die. So likewise, if we consider the death, there are a lot of uncertainties involved in this death. And if we are able to look at it in that angle, then most of the time our conceit also will be removed. Because we are really conceited, thinking that I am an educated person, I am so and so, I am with this, I am with that, I am better than another person. So likewise, thinking in that angle, so we are so much conceited. But if we understand that this inevitable death is common to me, then such conceit does not find a place in our mind, and it may not stay longer in our mind, because we easily become well grounded, well sort of humble, because we know even though at the moment this body, my body, appear like beautiful, it has the fate of getting death, going to die. Now, inevitable death is another aspect of this meditation. Therefore, we can say one can look at the whole process in the asubha aspect, that is to recover, understand the loathsomeness, and again to understand the marana sati, that is the inevitable death. So when one is understanding like that, so then actually once, as I said, lust is impossible to stay in the mind. As I said, if the mind is fairly suffering with lust or burning with lust, so it is difficult to immediately practice anapanasati, immediately practice dhatu manasikara, because mind is not in a refined mode, mind is not in a wise mood, but it is fairly colored, fairly agitated because of lust. on such situation, one medicine we can say is either practicing Patikula Manasikara to understand various parts of this living body as loathsome, or to use this kind of a situation, Navasivatika, to understand various stages of a corpse, a decaying corpse. So that is another aspect. Now, in the Buddha's time, this actually he has used certain dead bodies in order to give a strong or profound teaching to the others. So there is one prostitute called Sirima, and she was so beautiful. And even a monk got attracted to her. And this monk is now living with a lot of thoughts about this Sirima. And many people are actually being attracted to this Sirima. And so she is a very popular prostitute in that culture, in that area. So after some time, this lady passed away. And Buddha requested the king not to bury the body immediately, but rather protect it without allowing animals to come, and just to keep it for some time. Then after some time, it become bloated, it become discolored, sullen. And at that time, Buddha requested everybody to come closer to that body, to this Sirima's dead body. Now, with the order of the king, now many people are gathered there, including that monk who was thinking about Sirima. So now Buddha is also there. Now there's a huge gathering, and Buddha asks, who wants to have Sirima? No, nobody was interested. And actually Buddha first asks, who wants to have Sirima for 1,000? So in today's terms, we'll say $1,000. So for $1,000. So nobody came forward. Then Buddha reduced the price. Who wants to have her for $500? Nobody came forward. Say about $200? Nobody. $100? Nobody. $50? Even nobody. Maybe $1? Even nobody. How about having her free? Still no one came forward. But in the living time, there were many very rich people, even kings, come towards her and spend thousands of dollars. So I am using today's terminology, just for one night. But now, even for free, there is nobody come forward. And again, the body is entirely bloated, discolored, and oozing liquids, and extremely loathsome. So then Buddha gave a strong teaching there. So this is the fate of this body. Even though we've been attracted, we are like fools because we don't know the reality. So therefore, Buddha has used dead bodies to give some eye-opening lessons to the crowd, to the followers, so that they will understand the reality. Now, so couple of aspects, or in a way, a couple of benefits we can say of this practice is to remove lust, and again to remove conceit, and again to understand that everything is impermanent, everything is very temporary. This beauty is very temporary. This attractiveness is very temporary. This, health is temporary. And all this strength is also very temporary. So whatever we attribute towards our body is extremely temporary. We don't know when we will lose it. So this is something that we can understand if one is practicing this kind of meditation technique. Now, actually here, Buddha again and again asks us to do a kind of a comparison. Ayam pikho kayo evam dhammo evam bhavi evam anati toti. Now we have a dead body in front of us, and we can recognize various decaying parts, loathsomeness, and now you compare. So in front, I can see a corpse, and it is subject to this kind of a situation, and it is common to my body as well. Now, that kind of a comparison is something that Buddha asks us to do again and again. So when, at this particular meditation technique, so this comparison is the most important thing. So not only that we are looking at the outside corpse, but rather again and again we are bringing that same reality to ourselves and applying the same reality to ourselves, and to understand that this very body, my so-called my body, is also has the same fate, also will subject to the same situation, and is extremely temporary temporary state that I am holding right now. So the key feature here is ayampiko kayo evam dhammo evam bhavi evam anatitoti. So this body, so-called my body, is also the same like this in front corpse, and this my body also will ultimately come to the same state. So this is a kind of a comparison that Buddha requests to do while when one is engaged in this meditation. Now again, there are a few aspects we can consider when we are discussing this meditation. So if you are a male, better to use a male dead body, and if you are a female, better to use a female dead body. Because at the beginning, if the mind is lustful, so it could be possible that even for a dead body, this lust might arise. Even for a dead body, this lust might increase. So such a kind of ignorance is there when mind is infatuated, or the mind is colored with lust. So therefore, the advice is to use the same sex dead body. But on the other hand, if one is fairly wise, one can use the opposite sex dead body as well, because we are typically being attracted to opposite sex bodies. And when one is seeing what is the fate of such a body, by seeing it realistically on in front of oneself, so then a strong understanding is possible. So therefore, it's a kind of warning that given that one has to use the same sex. But on the other hand, if one is brave enough, one can use the opposite sex body as well. It is so powerful. It is so powerful because one being attracted towards an opposite sex person, but now we can see in front of us a dead body which is discolored, oozing and bloated, and different parts scattered here and there. So there is nothing to be attracted to. The person that I am attracted has the same fate. That body also has the same fate. So such kind of a very direct, eye-opening kind of insight is possible on this kind of a meditation. Now, nowadays anyway, we don't have these kinds of dead bodies available, because people are using various techniques to avoid showing the reality. So within a couple of days, they take the dead body and cremate it. And as a result, we can't see this reality. So on the other hand, we can use various other techniques to understand this. There are a lot of photographs available about kind of a decaying corpses. And if one likes, one can use those pictures as well. And in a way, in this meditation, there's a kind of a visualization is there, where one can visualize various stages of dead body. If one can't see the real dead body, one can visualize how this body is subjected to various stages of decaying. So that is also there. But anyway, I like to make a warning here that we need to know the limit, because this kind of meditation can lead to kind of a depression in the mind, and kind of even an anger in the mind, even hating one's body. So that is not expected from this meditation. So we should know the exact limit of this meditation. So only when mind is lustful or extremely conceited, we can use or we can apply this type of meditation technique. And when mind becomes again calm, quiet, equanimous, living in the middle, then we have to stop. So we should not practice this kind of a meditation just because it is known to us, just because it is mentioned in the book, because it can lose the balance of the mind. So maintaining the balance of the mind is very important, especially to maintain equanimity in the mind. So if you can remember, at the very beginning of the Satipatthana Sutta, Buddha mentioned Vinaya Loke Abhijja Domanassa. So in terms of the whole world, one shouldn't have any kind of lust, any kind of a greed, and again, any kind of despair, any kind of resistance shouldn't be there in the mind. So therefore, this kind of meditation, actually, if we don't know the exact amount, then it might lead to kind of a depression or kind of a resistance towards the whole world, kind of a domanasa, despair. And again, even one might start to hate one's body. And even someone might even think of committing suicide. So that is not expected. Hating one's body or committing suicide or sort of getting depressed is not the aim of the meditation. Rather, we should know it as a medicine. So when one is sick, one is using medicine. But if one is not sick, not necessary to use medicine. Similarly, this meditation technique also has to be used wisely, so that only when it is necessary we can use and get the benefit, and after that we can keep it aside. Now, there are three aspects in a way, or three techniques in a way we can we described in this Kaya Nupassana. One is the 32 parts, Patikkula Manasikara, where we are requested to see the body as various bodily parts. So this is one way. Then actually we are looking at the body in a loathsome aspect. So this is one type of meditation. And again in the Navasivatika, going somewhat closer to look at the body once it is passed away, once it is died, and at how the body is going through various stages, decaying stages. And that is another way. Now, when one is practicing like this, slowly our lust will be removed, conceit will be removed, our mind can be taken to the equanimity, to the middle. And again, since our attention is again and again taken towards our own body, so mind starts to stay closer to the body or associate in the body. So once it is started to associate the body, then one can further refine that mindfulness, that attention, by paying attention to various element characteristics. Now, element characteristics are not prominent or visible when our mind is gross, when our mind is lustful, when our mind is subject to any kind of a distraction, then the element characteristics available in the body seems hidden from us. It is being covered from us. But more our mind associates the body, then this element characteristics become more and more visible, more and more prominent. And you can feel various element characteristics. Now you can actually turn your practice towards Dhatu Manasikara, because the element characteristics are now visible and you are keeping your attention on those element characteristics. So once you keep going on in this process, more and more element characteristics are visible. Assume that at the beginning only a vibration was known, but you are using that vibration to further enhance your mindfulness, to refine your mindfulness. As a result, your attention is more and more maintained within the body. And now more element characteristics are going to be visible. Now not only say vibration, but even hardness, softness, roughness, smoothness, heaviness, lightness, say flowing, vibrations, movements. So likewise, so many element characteristics become evident. So slowly now we are bringing our meditation towards the Dhatu Manasikara. More and more elements are going to be visible. Their characteristics are going to be visible. And slowly, all are starting to tell us the same story. Everything is coming and everything is going. Everything appearing and then disappearing. Everything have the nature to arise and pass away. Samudaya Dhamma Anupasseva Kayasmin Viharati. වය ධම්මානුපස්සීවා කායස්මින් විහෙරති. සමුදය වය ධම්මානුපස්සීවා කායස්මින් විහෙරති. So therefore, once we are able to refine our attention, maintain an equanimous mind, free from any despair, free from any attraction, lust, and we simply maintain an equanimous mind, concentrated mind, so this kind of a very refined understanding is possible. How all these element characteristics are subjected to arising and passing away. Now, if one is able to do like that, then here also we can say that one is using one's body in order to improve one's mindfulness, in order to improve wisdom further. So, because one has understood this body also subjected to decay, subjected to death, after the death it may go through kind of inevitable decaying process, a loathsome decaying process. So therefore, no point of having any conceit or lust because of this body. How about using this same body to improve mindfulness, to improve wisdom? So this is a kind of a view change happens in one's mind. Now he is using this body in order to improve wisdom, in order to improve mindfulness. So therefore, Buddha mentions, අත්ථිකායෝති වා පනස්ස සති පච්චුපට්ඨිතා හෝති යාව දේව ඥාන මත්තාය පතිස්සති මත්තාය. So one understand there is a body, it doesn't belong to me, it is simply subjected to various causes and conditions, and it has inevitable death, and one is using යාව දේව ඥාන මත්තාය පතිස්සති මත්තාය. So one is using the body just to develop wisdom and again to have a stable mindfulness. So more and more, if one is developing such kind of a practice, instead of lust, instead of passion, one may have dispassion towards the whole thing. Not only this body, even to outside bodies, someone else's body, one may have a dispassion instead of passion, instead of lust. Now one is maintaining kind of a dispassionate attitude towards the whole world, not attaching to anything. So assume that one is continuing one's practice, more and more a detached kind of mind, and further he is improving his wisdom, so that the disenchantment become more prominent, which is based on the understanding. And when it is coming to some amount of improvement or to some culmination, it is possible that mind may let go of the whole thing, not attaching to anything. Now, in Kayanupassana, we are mostly dealing with the body, and now mind may let go the body entirely, not attaching to it at all. If one is able to maintain such mind, such detached mind, completely free mind, released mind, so then Buddha says, anisitocha viharati. So one is maintaining his attention unassociated, not attaching with anything. Nachakinchi loke upadhyati. He is not holding, he is not grasping anything in the world. So such state may be possible temporarily at the moment, temporarily at the beginning. Now, if one understood such kind of state in the mind, then one has to improve that state. Again and again, one is continuing one's practice, and again, one is experiencing that kind of a release. Now, then one wants to improve that release. So why it is not possible to maintain such a release forever, for the whole lifetime? Because we have so many defilements prevalent in the mind. So then one has to understand those defilements and has to uproot those defilements. So therefore, that requires a profound path. So that is nothing but the Noble Eightfold Path. So therefore, Buddha recommends Satipatthana Bhavana Gaminincha Patipada. So one is further improving one's mindfulness by following a path. So one understands the importance of the morality, how one needs to maintain one's speech and body in a more free manner, or sorry, more kind of a responsible manner, so that one is not harming oneself or the other person. So one's speech and body is used properly, well restrained. So the sila is coming to the picture. And one can't use understand various defilements in the mind if one's mind is not clear. So one has to have a concentrated mind, well collected mind. So therefore, samadhi, concentration also becomes necessary. Now, when everything is available, one has to recognize various defilements when they are popping up, when they are coming up, arising. And then and there, one has to remove or purify one's mind from those defilements. So the practicing of wisdom, vipassana, is the other aspect. So sila samadhi panya becomes one's path. And one recognizes, so this is the thing to do. It is not that I have to search here and there for the purification. Rather, I have to purify my own mind. So in order to do that, I have to use morality. Otherwise, again and again, I am polluting the mind. Again and again, my mind becomes sort of accusing myself, telling that I am not deserving this kind of a purification. But when I am maintaining very good sila, then I feel I deserve something more. I feel I am worthy of further improvement. So that kind of a positive atmosphere is being generated when we have good sila. And when one is having good sila, morality, that actually promotes or supports concentration, samadhi. So when good samadhi is there, in a way a necessary amount of concentration is there, clarity of mind is there, then one can easily recognize when various defilements are popping up in the mind, arising in the mind. Then we can apply mindfulness, we can apply wisdom, so that again mind become pure, again mind become purified. And one is maintained such free state of mind. So this is not something that we have to understand and then forget it. Rather, in our practical life, we have to use again and again. So therefore, the whole Satipatthana Sutta is a kind of a practical recipe, we can say. It is not just for the memory or just for a intellectual understanding. Rather, it is a complete practice. Complete practical approach we have to use in our own way of life. So therefore, we can say this Navasivatika, or the 9 stages of a decaying corpse, is also a very important or very strong type of practice one can utilize. And anyway, we have to know the limits of how long we need to use. So once our mind is well balanced, equanimous, we can do more in towards the wisdom-based practice, like Dhatu Manasikara, Anapanasati, Iriyapata, because now mind is in a very refined, equanimous state. So with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon or Sutta teaching, and now I would like to open the session for questions.